Welcome to the LTAD Network podcast. I'm your host, Rob Anderson, and on this podcast, we seek out the world's best researchers, coaches, support staff, teachers, and athletes to better understand the process of long-term athlete development. Don't forget to get your 7-day free trial to our online platform and 50% off your first month with the code LTADVIP50. That's LTADVIP50 at the LTAD Network Hub website. This podcast episode is sponsored by Statera. Statera is a web-based application that helps youth athletes and their stakeholders estimate training load, track maturation status, monitor readiness, and manage injury. Put together by coaches working with busy youth athletes, Statera helps keep things simple and brings together the most important training information in one place to ensure that effective athlete-centered decisions can be made. No more complicated Excel tutorials and spreadsheets. Just upload your athlete's data and their training schedule and start to take control of their training commitments and workload. Make more informed decisions and protect your athlete's well-being, supporting their performance. Statera takes your data very seriously. GDPR compliant and registered with the ICO, choose from a range of maturation indices and validated measures, or customize your own. Statera can record any training variable, and all your data is fully exportable. To reach out today and get a free walkthrough, head over to www.statera.uk. That's STATERA.UK. Today, I'm speaking with two practitioners from TSG Hoffenheim. Ludwig Ruff is a strength and conditioning coach at TSG Hoffenheim Academy and a research assistant at the TSG Research Lab. He completed a PhD on monitoring load and fatigue in elite youth soccer at Saarland University in Germany. Prior to this, he completed an MSc in strength and conditioning at Cardiff Metropolitan University, as well as doing an annual internship with Adelaide United in Australia. The main aim of Ludwig's PhD is to enhance the understanding of applied practice by investigating the usefulness of measurement instruments to assess acute responses to load in elite youth soccer players throughout adolescence. He's also talking about giving special consideration to growth and biological maturation within the framework of monitoring the youth athlete. Sascha Hartl is the head of performance and coordination science at TSG Hoffenheim. He's responsible for performance diagnostics in football within the professional teams, youth teams, both male and female, as well as ice hockey and handball. He is also the head of the strength and conditioning coaches, as well as being responsible for the data strategy and innovation as well. In addition, he heads up the consultancy of the TSG spin-off TSG Research Lab, which is a non-profit organization involved in science and research from sports to society. Well, good morning, Sascha and Ludwig. It's fantastic to have you on this morning. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning. Thanks a lot for having us.
So before we dig into the specifics of Hoffenheim and your individual roles, tell us a little bit about yourself, Sascha. What was your sporting journey as a young child? How did you get involved in football and how did you end up at Hoffenheim?
Yeah, first of all, I guess my personal sports career is not worth mentioning, as talent and motivation or fun didn't match. I was rather talented in endurance, middle distance running, but I didn't like it, to be honest. I always preferred some team sports. So I played soccer, but I didn't have enough soccer skills to reach a higher level. So I played it just for fun. And that's why I tried a lot of different kind of sports. And even during my studying period, I had to compete a lot of different sports. For example, cross-country skiing or skiing, windsurfing, beach volleyball, and so on. And I guess it's still beneficial for me to have a different kind of approach. I'm not grown up in the soccer bubble, and I guess it's rather helpful for my job I have right now.
And in terms of your studies, where did you go for your studies, and what sort of studies did you complete?
Yeah, I studied sports science to become a teacher, but I realized very quickly that sports science is much more exciting than becoming a teacher. And after completing my study, I had the possibility to stay at university, because my university wanted to build up a performance diagnostics department, and I was able to help with this. And after several years, I was allowed to manage this department for many, many years. And the great chance we had there, that we had the whole range of sports. So again, different kind of sports, not only soccer. Yes, soccer, but not only soccer. We had a lot of athletics and triathlon and basketball and all kind of sports from the recreational level up to the professional teams. So this, again, was very helpful. And what influenced me a lot was a lecturer I had at university. She came from the former GDR. And in GDR, when you want to become a sports doctor, you had to complete a several years of additional studying in sports. And what she taught me in an early stage was to have a holistic view on all the aspects. So not only one skill, it's always multidimensional. And that was very helpful for me. And after having stayed for 14 years at university as a lecturer and head of Department of Sport of Performance Diagnostics, I was offered a job by TSG because they wanted to have an in-house performance diagnostics as well, and to wanted to put more stress on physiological research. And that's when I started at TSG.
Fantastic. And yourself, Ludwig, give us a bit of an understanding of what sports did a young Ludwig play, and how did you get involved in Hoffenheim?
Yeah, it was probably a bit more smoother and shorter because I'm younger. But I did play soccer or football when I was younger. I did also do some track and field during my adolescence, a few years. But I probably followed more the normal football career. But I realized when I finished my high school that probably I won't make it anyway. So I stopped and quit playing soccer, moved towards university. And I was a bit fed up with soccer culture in general. So I thought I'd go out and I will never come back. But when I studied sports science, I somehow got interested in the other side. So the coaching role and the science role as well. So both sides, actually. So I did a few internships in soccer clubs again in the S&C area, so strength and conditioning area. And somehow I got more and more involved in this side. Did my master's in Cardiff, actually. Did an internship afterwards in Australia and came back to Germany afterwards for conducting or doing a PhD. And at the same time, when I started the PhD, I was always interested in research as well. So I wanted to combine both, actually, doing the practical side and doing research. And that's where I started a smaller club in Saarbrücken. And somehow through a project with Sasha and the team here, I got involved in the research lab and then moved over. I'm here since this is my fourth season now, so 3 years, and I have a dual role, which is still cool. So doing research at the research lab and also being an S&C coach at the club, and having both roles now for 3 years, the fourth season now.
Fantastic. So Sasha, give us a bit of an understanding of the club in terms of the academy side of it. What sort of age groups are we talking about? How many athletes are we discussing? Give us an understanding of what Hoffenheim looks like day to day.
Yeah, we start with an under-12 team in a male area, going up to the professional level. And with the female teams, we start with the under-13 team and as well going up to the professional team. Both professional teams play in the highest division in Germany. The under-20 team, the females, they all also play in the second division, what's very interesting. So in every youth team in Hoffenheim, the teams play in the highest possible division. And that makes our data very interesting. And also we are possible to have some younger kids because we have a so-called children's perspective team, how to translate, Kinder Perspektive team. So the kids being younger than 11 years, they are staying at their home club, but twice a week they have some training sessions at Hoffenheim.
And what was it that caused the club to first start investigating maturation as something that they wanted to look into further? Was it injuries in these kids? Was it understanding talent ID better? What was it that sparked that interest?
I guess for me, the starting point was the very common topic of relative age effect. When I came here, there was not very much interest about the topic. But I was able to realize that we have a lot of kids being born in January and very few kids being born in December. And that's why I started to put more emphasis on this topic. And then after we did all the relative age things, I guess there was some special situation. I guess we had some guests from Spain and they watched some training sessions. And afterwards, the guests told me, you're under 16 teams, looks very interesting. And I thought, under 16 teams? Oh, it was under 14th team. And that was the starting point when I thought there's something that needs to be reconsidered, because I guess every academy struggles with the topic of too many early matured players within the system. And that was a starting point when I wanted to implement some kind of quantification, some kind of numbers. And that's why we started with estimation of biological maturity. I guess this was in 2017.
I guess that maybe predates you, Ludwig. So Sasha, what were some of the initial methods that you explored using to kind of quantify maturation?
When we first started with this topic, we started with the Meerwald method. So we took the sitting height and the standing height and tried to have more information about biological maturity. That was an early starting point. But fortunately, then as Ludwig already mentioned, Ludwig came over. And for me, it was a perfect fit because I was aware of the issue we have within the academy. I was aware of the fact that we have to dive a little bit deeper within this topic. And Ludwig was very interested in this topic and had already had some background about it. And that's why we started to dig a little bit deeper.
So Ludwig, when did the Bausport device first come across your radar? How did you end up finding out about that? And what was the interest point there?
Yeah, that was pretty much my starting point here as well. So somehow through our cooperation partner, the SAP, somehow got in touch with Sasha and said, well, there's a company who is interested in not collaborating, but just having the product here. And just if we're interested in trying it out and seeing how things work out to get a deeper insight into maturity, essentially. And at that time, I was still not here, but it was the first project. How the device works and everything. So we thought it was a pretty cool thing because we were not really able to measure or monitor maturity objectively, but objectively, yes, through the mirrored equations and so on, but it was just a more objective way to essentially measure skeletal age, which is probably a bit a better proxy in terms of accuracy and getting rid of all the other limitations, obviously. So that was the starting point where they approached us and we thought, yeah, let's give it a try, measure all of our kids and see how we can do things with it. And yeah, that was the initial starting point.
So how has it been implemented across the academy? Like, is it the medical team that operates it? Is it the sports science team? Is it both? What age groups and teams? Is it across the whole academy or specific individuals that you're looking at? How does it work?
Essentially, we do start at the under nine. So the under nines to under 11s get measured twice a year. And then from the under 12s, as Sasha said, we have them much more on the campus. So we measure them every 3 to 4 months. So it depends on, typically it's three times a year, essentially. So we measure the under 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 age groups. And it's been done by essentially the team of Sasha, so the performance department. But all the growth measurements of standing height, seated height, and body mass is been done by more the medical department, probably from the physios, from the teams, essentially. And it's been a challenge, essentially, because we have different sites here in Hoffenheim, and it's not been done at one campus, but we have three campuses across two different villages as well. So we have to be aware that data collection from the physios has been done correctly in terms of reliability, so rate reliability stuff. That's been an in-house project on itself, but the measurement as such, there are 2 to 3 people who can measure and do measure all the players. As Sasha mentioned, we also have the female team, so we also do it with the females, so from the under 13 up to the under 17, and at some points even under 20 players, because they move up quite early. So they do have in the under 20 age group some players who are actually 16, 15 even already, and not fully mature yet.
Fantastic. So Sasha, how effective have you found it in terms of incorporating it into the club and making decisions from the information that you obtain?
That's been very, very helpful because from time to time, and if you use some pictures to explain the coaches the topic of early or late maturing players, you have a lot of players. It's very obvious that you have premature or late mature players, but with a lot of players, it's not obvious because perhaps they don't reach a very high final adult height. So from player to player, it's very difficult to estimate, and having an objective point to talk about, discuss about, it's very helpful. And we do a lot of performance diagnostics throughout all the teams, and we have a great data set, but there can be a very big bias. And I guess the greatest advantage is when we have a discussion with the coaches or the head of sports in the academy, which player makes it up to the next youth level. It's very important to contextualize the speed the player has, because from time to time, some coaches or the head of sports academy thinks this player is not fast enough, and we can tell him, oh, have a look at his maturity, and he has some more years to develop than the other players in his team. So it's very helpful in terms of getting an idea how far the development the player is and what each single player can achieve.
And have you used the data much to inform things like training load individually for players, or to help with injury prevention in any sort of way?
Yes, we are very aware of the fact that during the growth spurt, the risk of injury is much higher. That's why it's of great interest for us to really being able to measure the time period of growth spurt and to inform the SNC coaches and the coaches to have a more detailed look at these players who are in this phase.
And in terms of, shaping the program of the players week to week in terms of their scheduling, does it start to influence how different players may have different schedules, or do they all follow a similar schedule, but you modify sort of activities they're doing?
Yeah, so the logistical aspect is probably the most challenging one in general, because of different sites that we have here, but also due to the different time points teams train. But within a team, let's start with this one. Within a team, everybody, so it starts always with the awareness aspect and the education part. So we're quite happy, I guess, that the physios, the medical department, and the S&C coaches are really well on page, and they do have a good influence on the coaches in general. So within a team, they do follow a similar strategy in terms of training program, but it's quite heavily influenced and individualized accordingly in terms of growth and maturity. So the S&C program, strength program, speed program, and so on is quite individualized and put into groups depending where a player sits in terms of maturity status. So within under 14 and 15, there's a big spread, obviously, and the guys who are early maturing and almost fully mature, they do have a different strength program compared to the guys who are late maturing and pretty much prematurity, pre-growth spurt. So it does has a place in this context. And then across age groups, given the logistical constraints that we have, it was challenging the first 2 years, essentially. But last season, we were able to finally get it done to have the under 12 to including a 14 age group on one campus to let them train according to their maturity groups, so biobanking essentially. And it was a quite cool experience for the coaches, for the players, and so on, where we were able to essentially bring them on one pitch, have different setups and different training session modalities and so on, where they just were able to show themselves in a similar maturity status. So I guess the under 12 are quite still, luckily under 13 also are quite even proportionally. So a few late, a few early, and the maturity is on time. But it starts to diverse in the under 14 age group, of course. And that's where we saw the biggest spread of having a few players from the under 13 playing essentially up and many from the under 14 playing down. And so it was a quite nice diverse mix between the age groups. And it was a good experience from all different perspectives, not only from the physical side, but also obviously from the psychological side, where they had to struggle sometimes, the early maturing, when they played essentially now against only the same maturity guys. And for the late maturing players, it was also quite new cool because they had to lead, obviously, all of a sudden in the training sessions where it was just following the others previously in the age group. So it's quite challenging overall, but that was or is our approach, and it follows through from the under 15 and under 16. Even though under 15 and 16 they do have fairly little and less late maturing players, unfortunately, given the system, it's an ongoing challenge for us to bring them in and keep them in the system. But within these age groups, it's a similar approach whereby coaches are well educated and aware of the fact that late maturing do have different challenges, different opportunities and physical qualities essentially, and they do follow a different physical strength and speed and all the other modalities program.
So you're obviously bio-banding training sessions within the club. Is there opportunities within Germany for players to engage in bio-banded tournaments as well, or is it mainly just in-house training?
So far, it has been only in-house, given the few other clubs who are actually following sort of rigorous methods to measure the skeletal age, or essentially biological maturity. Outside, we haven't been able to get in touch with other clubs on this regard, essentially because of different countries. Mm-hmm. So far, it's been only in-house, but it would be cool. And we were thinking about with other clubs to get in touch with them to essentially ask if it would be possible in the preseason. Again, logistics are quite challenging overall. And I know that in England or in UK, it's also challenging, but maybe distances are not that far, for example, from Bournemouth to Southampton. So it's a bit closer compared to us to, I don't know, Hamburg or Dortmund.
And Sasha, have you started to see the effects of this in terms of maybe reduction in injury rates, or even players who maybe previously wouldn't have been discussed because they would have been considered to be too small now being discussed? And has that changed the decisions made across the club, and are you seeing impacts from that?
It's hard to measure it concerning the injury rates because it's very complex, and we also did a lot of research about the causes of injury and so on, and it's very hard to discuss in terms of injury rates. But Ludwig and me, we spend a lot of time in educating our scouts. We try to reduce the numbers of the early matured players and having more late maturing players within the system, because we have a huge bias in the youth, in the youngest teams, also concerning relative age effect, and in the under 13, 14, 15, 16 teams with a big bias. And we're doing a lot of education, and to be honest, it's hard. It's even hard for the scouts to select other players, because we did some research and we did some measurements in a semi-professional academies. And what we find there is it's rather the same. A lot of early maturing players, even in the semi-professional academies. So it's difficult. Honestly, it's difficult to find these late maturing talented players within the soccer system.
And Ludwig, I understand that obviously as part of your PhD, you're doing a lot of research, but I'm seeing you published some of this research coming out. So talk us through a few of the studies that you've been, conducting and also beginning to publish.
Yeah, so probably one I'd like to mention is that when we started measuring the kids, we weren't really feedbacking the results to the coaches or to the other teams or the other key stakeholders. And so we thought it would be pretty cool to ask the coaches and the medical team to estimate or guess the skeletal ages of the players from under 12 to under 16, and using this as an educational tool, essentially, firstly, and then having this as a research and a publication at the end as an outcome. And what was quite interesting that the coaches and also the SNC coaches or other SNC coaches and physios really underestimated and overestimated so the extremers. So the guys who are really early were sometimes 3 to 4 years ahead were estimated by the coaches to be only 2 years older. So the extreme, they weren't really able to estimate that they're really that big of a spread within the team. And the same for the late maturing guys. So we have a few, but not many, but who, many players were minus 2 years behind. So fairly late, actually. And all the other coaches estimated them as being pretty much on time. So normal maturing. And it was quite an eye-opener for all the other people involved, not only the coaches, but also then the scouts, essentially, and the key stakeholders around the teams, that there's such a big spread of 4, 5, 6 years, even within the under 14, 15, and even 16 age group. So that was a cool thing for in-house education purposes. We did the same thing, actually, with the scouts. So they looked and watched a training session of the younger age groups of under 14, I guess it was. And we gave them a sheet and said, look, just estimate the ages of our players. They should be aware that they scouted them actually previously. So they should know them and they knew them. And we saw the same bias with them. We haven't done an education then with them afterwards to see if it had an effect essentially. But it was interesting for them as well to see, well, this guy is actually almost fully mature in the under 14, 15 age group. And this guy is pretty much pre-growth spurt. And was that was one part of the entire education process that we took with the scouts of showing them, it's just essentially they're better in eyeballing the players because they can't measure them when they scout them, of course, essentially, but give them a checklist, giving them tools to their hands so they can have a better understanding and in eyeballing players and estimating their maturity status. And I think a second one would be that contextualizing essentially all the physical performance data is another project that since I'm here, I started essentially through Sean and his PhD student from Megan, where they just did the same with tennis. So we have reference data according to their chronological age and also according to their skeletal age, essentially. So a guy, a player who's 14 years chronologically, but for 15, 16 years skeletally, we just plot the data accordingly. So some guys who are early, essentially, might be really fast in the age group according to their chronological age, but fairly slow compared to the skeletal age. It has to do something with the training age, obviously, because they haven't had 2 more years of strength training and speed training and so on, of course. But it's another contextualizing way to show the player, but also the other key stakeholders, scouts and coaches, that, well, he's not that fast as we assumed is initially, for example. And that's a quite cool thing as an eye-opener again for all the people involved in the process of talent selection, of progress of the players and so on, but also for the players, getting buy-in from the players of saying, look, you actually have to work a bit harder. Just because you're fast now doesn't mean that you will be fast in 2 years when you're actually fully mature already. And all the others have 4 or 5 years to catch up with you. So that was a cool thing as well. And we put this into all the other physical performance data as well in terms of jumping and endurance and so on. So that's another cool project actually that's still in the making and needs a bit more time and finalizing to get this through and get this out actually.
Yeah, in my previous employer, we did a site visit down to Southampton Football Club and they had done the same thing where they had it contextualized within the whole squad, regardless of skeletal age. And then you hit another button in the data presentation and it then showed you that individual against all their biological peers. And it really does change the way you view that individual as, you know, going from excelling to suddenly not being so excellent, or going from poor to suddenly being quite good. So that's really interesting. And I think it's something that's probably there's not enough research out there on that to get norms, because we maybe have norms for his speed for under 14s or under 12s. But as you say, we're lacking that extra context of, okay, how does maturation influence that? And what's a normal speed score for someone at that maturation level? So that's fantastic. I'll definitely keep an eye out for that. You mentioned using the device across both the male and female academy. Have you seen similar patterns between the two in terms of early maturers predominating, or is it different in the female context?
It's somewhat different in terms of the spread and the bias. So for the female teams, there's not that big of a bias overall. There is a bias in terms of having many early, but also many late. So it's actually quite proportionally even, more or less. On average, it's a bit early, obviously, but there are, on the older age group specifically, there are many more who are actually late. And that's a quite, I'm not working in the females area, but we only take the data from them. And unfortunately, they sit on a different campus again. So it's, again, logistically different, difficult for us to talk to them and get in touch. But we do see that there are a few very early, many on time, and quite a many late as well, even though they have their growth spurt much earlier. So when we get them in at 13, 14, they're predominantly already post growth spurt. But that's something that's very interesting in terms of them progressing up. So as I said, there are 15, 16-year-old female players playing already second division, essentially, sometimes. And even them, they might be on time or even a bit late. So actually, in biological terms, in maturity wise, they're 4 or 5 years behind to all the other female players in the second division. So raising awareness again is the first part, and educating them of saying, well, we have to be a bit more cautious and a bit more waiting more time, and we need more time in the development phase, and all those things help quite a bit in, again, contextualizing where they are at the moment.
And Sasha, are there any plans to develop, the maturation monitoring further? Are there any, Ludwig's obviously mentioned around quantifying some of those physical metrics to maturation. Have you got any other projects in the pipeline that you've got in the back of your head or even started to begin?
Yeah, I guess Ludwig already mentioned that it's a lot of work to do to have all these dashboards putting all this normative data contextualized on a maturity level. So this is a lot of work to do for us. But I guess the system is running quite well already. I guess the next steps, there are a lot of ideas, especially concerning research. As we mentioned before, there are two aspects. One is having the information within the academy to develop the players. And the other part is doing a lot of research to have a lot of more understanding. So the data we already collected, it is very helpful, but there's a lot of more things that needs to be understood. For example, the question, what is maturity score within a school class, for example? Is the zero still the zero? Or do we need to have new calculations, new normative data? So contextualizing everything is a greatest interest for us.
And Ludwig, I'm guessing as you pursue your PhD, you obviously have that project you're looking at. Have you got other subsequent research projects in mind to fulfill your PhD?
Yeah, I think all those ideas are pretty much sitting outside now at the moment for the PhD. But we have, luckily with the research lab, we do have also a big psychological department, for example. And that's something that Sean Cumming has spoken about a lot, about the underdog hypothesis, for example. So matching maturity, biological maturity, essentially to all the psychological data of, well, is there a fit in terms of the underdog hypothesis whereby late maturing guys have something special in terms of psychology, for example. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to do this, even though we sit just next to each other. But that's, for example, just a project that sits in my mind for a long time already now. On the other sides, we do work with other organizations such as golf, for example, where we do measure the top players in golf, for example, and if it has an impact on their decision-making process in terms of talent identification and selection and development, essentially. So that's just speaking outside of football context, other sports organizations. Working together with Eirik Wick now, hopefully soon, in terms of South Africa, other country, seeing differences between countries and socioeconomic classes, for example. Other aspects might be in terms of sprint mechanics and the development. So adolescent awkwardness is still an interesting aspect for me, for example, seeing how they grow during the growth spurt and how this affects or does not affect changes in mechanics during sprinting, for example. So there are quite many ideas sitting around, and just time-wise it's challenging sometimes to get this done. But luckily we do have the coaches on board, and that's a cool thing that we can implement things and can look at things hopefully a bit more in depth in the near future.
Fantastic. Well, I know in terms of the research you're producing, that's accessible on ResearchGate. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So both of us are on ResearchGate. So all the papers or the research stuff is out there.
And in terms of social media, are you followable on Twitter or Instagram or about that, where people can reach out to you potentially?
Well, I do have Instagram. I do have Twitter or X now. So I guess my handle, Ruf Ludwig. So without space or whatsoever, just written together. That's my handle on both. And LinkedIn, obviously, I'm as well.
And yourself, Sasha, or do you like to keep a low profile?
Yeah, you can find my profile on LinkedIn, but I'm a little bit older, so I'm not on Twitter, or is it called X right now? I don't know. I'm not on Instagram, but the basic information you find on ResearchGate or on LinkedIn, and we also have a website of the TSG Research Lab. So just Google TSG Research Lab and you find all the information about the things we do concerning research.
Fantastic. Well, I'll put links to all those places in the show notes so people can access that and have a read. But thanks so much for your time this morning. I know it's a busy life working professional football, so I appreciate you taking time out of your full-time roles to spend some time discussing this. But thanks so much for your time. It's been really fantastic speaking with you both.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for having us. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, we'd love your support by leaving a rating or review on your chosen podcast player. You can also find us on social media using @LTAD Network. Thanks for listening to this episode. And don't forget to get your 7-day free trial to our online platform, as well as 50% off your first month with the code LTADVIP50.